Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. Nancy Mobacher, IBCLC, FILCA, and author of several books, including Breastfeeding Made Simple, Seven Natural Laws for Nursing Mothers, and Working and Breastfeeding Made Simple, fell in love with breastfeeding while nursing her three sons, Carl, Peter, and Ben, who are now grown. In 1982, before the lactation profession even existed, she began working as a volunteer mother support counselor and found her passion, helping women meet their breastfeeding goals. Board certified as lactation consultant in 1991, from 1993 to 2003, she started and grew a large private lactation practice in the Chicago area, where she saw thousands of families. Since then, she worked for a major breast pump company and a national corporate lactation program. Currently, she speaks at events around the world and contracts hospitals to help improve breastfeeding practices. Her mission is to simplify life for new parents, many of whom, without realizing it, make breastfeeding more complicated than it needs to be. Hi, Nancy. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited to speak with you.
I am delighted to be here, Deb. I have to tell you that this birth stuff is my passion. So any opportunity to help somebody who's out there, it's my joy.
Oh, well, me too. Absolutely. I'll put myself in quotes of birth nerd, birth geek. I dive into this stuff and it's just so juicy and delicious. So I want just to kind of jump into what brought you to the path as a midwife.
It was my own experience. I was pregnant with our first baby. I was so happy that I was going to be a mother. I was so happy that I was going to have a baby, but his birth was awful. It was what I now know was an absolutely preventable cesarean section. And as I walked down the halls, or I should say, as I shuffled down the hall after having major surgery, I noticed that almost every one of the mothers on that floor was also shuffling down the hall. And as I started to ask questions, I found out that 90% of them had had cesarean sections on the same Friday evening that I had, right before a long weekend, by the way, and that the other women who were shuffling had had episiotomies. And so we were all shuffling down the hall, and every one of us was what I now consider to be a victim of the American obstetrical system. And that's what started the wheels rolling. I also knew that I didn't ever want to go through major surgery to have a baby again. And so I started doing research from my hospital bed. In those days, it wasn't easy, by the way, because there was no internet, there were no cell phones, but I was bound and determined to find out what got me on an operating table and why I had ended up with major surgery.
So what did you find out?
What I found out that my cesarean and probably 95 to 97% of the C-sections that were done or that are being done are completely preventable. Nature isn't 100%, and I accept that. But to have a 30 to 50 to 75% rate of cesarean sections in hospitals across the United States is absolutely insane. It's ridiculous and it's criminal.
It's funny, maybe it was yesterday or the day before, I was looking online at the news and I was scrolling through and there was an article that this is just a day or so ago that said American C-sections are at a third of births and authorities are saying this isn't right. And I'm like, why is this breaking news now? Like, haven't we known this for a while?
I have articles from the 1970s that say cesarean epidemic. Is it necessary? No, it's not necessary, but nothing is done. Nothing is done. It keeps getting worse and worse and worse. I shouldn't say nothing is done because here we are on the phone talking about this, but so little has been done and things do seem to be getting worse, which is just such a tragedy in my eyes.
I agree. It's interesting. The more people I talk to, the more I hear very similar story about one's own experience was what propelled them further. And, you know, I think it sometimes that's what it takes is for you to have to process and deal and then realize if I'm processing and dealing, so many others are too. And how can we change that? So that's what I wanted to get into. Oh, sure. Did you want to say something about that too?
Just when you saw something on the news, I was watching the news the other day waiting for the weather and the head article, the head newscast was that a baby was born by the side of the road and the paramedics delivered the baby. Well, first of all, the paramedics weren't even there when the baby was born. And secondly, even if they had been, the paramedics did not deliver the baby. The mother's body, the mother delivered the baby, and I think she should get credit for it. It drives me crazy. And I believe, number one, that the baby was better off being born in the car than at any American hospital. And secondly, the first thing they want to do is find something to cut the cord. And of course, we all know that you're not supposed to cut the cord for quite some time mm-hmm. after the baby's born. So I don't like to watch TV because it upsets me.
So I wanted to talk mainly today about traumatic births, and that's what we're going to talk about, recovering, dealing, disappointment from birth. But before we go down that road, can you talk a little bit about the impact on one's personal view of birth and how what that has on upcoming births? So, you know, we're hearing these stories about births and how that creates the perception for someone that might be pregnant.
Yeah. Well, the fear in this culture permeates everything. I spoke at a junior high school a while back, and all of the young women there were talking about the fact that they were terrified to have babies, and that when they did, they were going to have epidurals. And we had to talk about the fact that that in and of itself was something that needed to change. Every woman is different, of course. But the women who contact me are all women who have had traumatic births. And just as an aside, I will tell you that some of them call me and they almost apologize for not having had a cesarean section. But still, they were traumatized. And so they want to know whether or not I would be able to talk with them and help them in any way. So first of all, when you have major surgery or you have trauma in any way for a birth, it changes you as a mother. It doesn't mean that you're a bad mother or that you don't love your baby, but it definitely changes you. First of all, you have to spend the first period of time recovering from the surgery or from the trauma. And so you can't be fully present for your little one, even if you want to be. Secondly, most of the people don't understand. They say things to you like, well, at least you can have a baby. My sister can't have a baby. And while that may be true, it really does make it difficult for the woman to begin to talk about what's happened to her and to process what's happened for her. So she is physically at a disadvantage. She is emotionally at a disadvantage. And it changes everything. It changes the partnership when the woman no longer feels good about herself, or she feels frightened, or she feels betrayed. Whatever it happens to be, it definitely changes who she is and her worldview, as you say.
So what did you say when you heard the junior high girls talk about birth? And we know that, if, as you mentioned, the fear, what did you say to try to change that so that they don't approach, whenever they do have babies, that it's just this horrible thing looming over them? How did we try to shift that?
Well, there's a lot of different things that I do, but I did a PowerPoint presentation that has women smiling and having babies. And I have women also who are lying on a table looking as if they're crucified, you know, getting an epidural or getting a cesarean. And over a period of that hour, the images, I think, make a tremendous difference. There are births where there's candlelight and there's music and it's very peaceful. And as the baby comes out, the baby opens its eyes and looks at its mom, and the mother reaches down for her baby and she puts the baby close to her, and they gaze into one another's eyes, as opposed to the births where the C-sections are done and the babies are immediately whisked away and they're crying and everybody looks, you know, like it's a war zone. I also very often bring a mother and a baby with me to the classes that I teach and to the presentations that I do. And the mother herself gets to talk about the difference between her hospital birth and the birth that she decided to have at home, or if she's a first-time mother, why she made the decision to have the birth at home. We talk also about the fact that every one of their ancestresses had babies. And if their ancestresses had babies, then they come from really good stock. And we talk about the advantages of natural childbirth to all of these young women and how it's like running a marathon. Many of them are athletes, and they know that it takes hard work, but when you cross that finish line, it's fantastic. And we talk about the reasons that babies who are born to a mother who's had a natural childbirth are more alert. There's so many things that we do. And by the end of my talk, usually I have several of the young women who come over to me and say, I'm so glad you came here, and I'm thinking differently, and what can I read? And so I feel like we have got to get to these young women when they are young, because by the time they're in high school, it's sometimes even a little bit too late.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I don't want to ever demonize medicine because I definitely think it has its place. I do think that we need to introduce the idea that there are options, that, you know, if we only tell girls that there is one, when I use girls because, you know, as opposed to women, because these are younger people, that, you know, if there's only one way in society and movies and media is showing this one way, we do need to introduce this another way so that they understand that there's, that there are options, so that they we don't have such fear around everything. And then even, even kind of creating an understanding of the medical side. So should they have to go that medical route, they're not terrified, you know, so just kind of giving them the full picture. So I want to talk a little bit, since we're kind of, we're going about traumatic birth, that's kind of our theme today, very cheerful theme. Okay. How would you define a traumatic birth? Because what one may think, like what one woman might experience, someone else might look at that, like that wasn't traumatic, or what one may think is traumatic or went through, someone would be like, wow, that was traumatic. And then the woman herself doesn't. So how would you define that?
Well, I think that any woman who feels as if what we call her woman space or her woman place has been called into question, feels sad, feels angry, feels betrayed, feels confused, feels frustrated, anything that calls that into question would possibly be part of a disappointing, upsetting, or traumatic birth. I have women who call me who say, I cry all the time, and everybody kind of writes it off as just kind of normal postpartum depression. What I'm here to tell you is that these women are not having what's normal postpartum depression. They are having a reaction, a healthy reaction in some respects, to something that happened to them that was really disappointing and upsetting. So anything that calls into question their strength, their power, their joy, their expectations, the loss of a dream, those are all things that are partly part of a traumatic or upsetting birth experience. And I get calls literally every single day from women who are upset by their birth experiences.
That's overwhelming. Do you have any statistics or data on the frequency? It sounds like your interaction with it, as you mentioned, is daily. Do you have any statistics or data on the frequency of a traumatic birth?
I did an online class just last week with two physicians who have begun to understand that birth is unfortunately traumatic for many, many women. And they said up to 75 to 90% of women are disappointed and upset with their births in this culture.
That's those are huge numbers. And it's disappointing to hear that so many women are entering parenthood with that on their back, with that, you know, that that disappointment in that experience.
It's so true. It is so true. And I have so many women who come to me who have had severe or moderate or some kind of postpartum depression afterwards and are prepared for it this time. And they have these beautiful, lovely, peaceful, candlelit, delightful births this time. And they don't have a day of postpartum depression. So that's something that also has to be looked at. I've just written a chapter on for my book about postpartum depression. Is it really as profoundly common as we think it is? Is it all hormonal, or is it possibly partly or even more than partly developed because of the actual birth experience? Do epidurals themselves cause depression? Do ultrasounds cause depression? Do the drugs that are given cause depression? Does the lack of love in that birth room cause depression? What, taking the baby away, whatever it happens to be, we have to take a good long look. It is possibly hormonal in some circumstances, of course. And just parenthetically, I also want to agree with you that I don't want to demonize the medical profession. I always say I don't love doctors and hospitals unless we need them. And when we need them, I'm so appreciative. I'm so grateful. I'm so glad that we have them. But I do think that there is much too much medical intervention into almost all of the births in this culture. And that's a problem. And not enough cesarean prevention work. So, but the women are not depressed. Even some of the women who took quite a bit of time to, quote, recoup and recover. Many of the women who had took antidepressants afterwards and are really quite concerned, or who didn't feel bonded to their babies. And I want you to know that they have these lovely, lovely births. One of the women had 4 cesareans. She flew from China to have her baby here. She had a home birth here with me and my quote unquote team. And she said not one day of postpartum depression, not one, and her baby is now 2.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I want to jump on something you're mentioning about your book and that you're writing. If you're able to share any of the research, you're saying, you know, some of the medication, the epidural, maybe even the Pitocin, because that usually comes along with the epidural. Were you able to find data that supported that could be one reason that depression occurred?
My co-author, who is quite a bit younger than I am, is doing a lot of that particular research. But we certainly have been doing this by speaking to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of women. And so, you know, call it you just stories, whatever. But we know that there is some kind of a link between the type of things that happen in the interventions that happen in the actual depression.
I can't wait to read this in your, I can't wait to read your book.
Neither can I. I've been writing it for 1,000 years.
So let's talk a little about the grieving process. What does that typically look like after a disappointing birth?
Well, it's interesting because it can look very different from one woman to the next. One woman, she may be crying, she may be withdrawn, she may be quiet, she may not be kind of tending to her baby the way we would hope that she would. And for another woman, she's very busy and she's going out and she's doing things. Depression and grief have a lot of different faces. And so you can't necessarily look at one woman and say she's depressed and look at another woman and say she isn't. It takes being able to sit down with these women and to find out where they're at. And of course, when they come to me already, I know that there's something cooking. And so we proceed from there. Some women overeat, some women don't eat at all. Some women exercise, some women don't exercise at all, some women over-exercise. Depression and grief can take so many different forms that we really need to take a look a little bit deeper to find out what's going on with this particular woman.
So how would her support system aid her in recovery and support, but even recognize that something's a little off?
Well, it depends on her support system. There are people who say, it was my friend who said to me, you need to take a look at this, you're not okay. And there are other women who find that their relationships with their partners have changed, they're not interested in sex perhaps anymore. It's interesting because when a woman has had a cesarean, in a sense, her vagina has not been quote unquote used. And so you would think that, you know, she'd be able to resume sexual relations relatively quickly afterwards. Of course, her belly may be very tender. But a lot of the women who have had cesareans say, I wasn't interested in resuming my lovemaking until, you know, a year or 2 or 3 afterwards. And part of that may have to do with the fact that their vaginas, which were supposed to be involved in childbirth, were not involved. And so it calls into question who they are as women. And this gets much deeper than we have time for today, and I don't think I'm even answering your question, but the truth of the matter is that sometimes it's the woman herself who recognizes that something's wrong, and sometimes it's the people who are around her who realize that the way that she birthed and what happened to her at that time in her life has had a profound effect, and she really does need somebody to listen to her and to see if they can suggest something that might help things along.
Do you think the woman often recognizes that she had a traumatic birth, or do you think she just feels something's off? Do you feel like maybe it's the care provider that might have to sometimes say, like, you know, this was hard, or do you need to talk about it? I guess maybe as a midwife, you probably have more time, because I know that postpartum visits for more of a traditional OB-GYN, it's a very quick meeting. So how does it even come to light that it was a traumatic birth and not just postpartum depression?
Well, the women who call me are oftentimes not pregnant yet, or they're pregnant and all of a sudden they realize they're going to have to go through another birth experience and they don't want to have to go through one like the one that they did. There are some women who come to me who say to me, you know, I had an epidural last time and it really wasn't too bad. And I had, you know, episiotomy and I had this, and but it wasn't too bad. And then it's after they've had these natural births at home that they look at me and they say, oh my goodness, I didn't realize what the difference could be. And then they sometimes get a little bit sad about their first experience, which is not what we're hoping for, but they've kind of woken up, they've awakened. And I want women who are conscious and awake. So, it depends on the woman. It depends on the woman. And there are so many stories I'm thinking I want to tell you, and I'm hesitating because I want to just have you ask your questions and see if I can answer them to your
satisfaction. Well, I want to hear your story that you have in your mind, but what you said kind of makes me think of, so I did a teacher training. We do these often. And it was a woman, she's out of childbearing years and she's had two kids and they were older. And as we were learning about the birth process and empowered births and traumatic births and typical interventions, she got really upset and said, you know, I didn't realize how horrible my birth was until I took this course. At which point I felt horrible that now she's reflecting that her birth was so bad in her mind. But right. She just, I would put in quotes, like typical birth, like enter, IV, Pitocin, epidural, you know, it's kind of like a standard cascade of interventions. Mm-hmm. And while after she didn't think anything was off because that's what she'd expected, but now she's learning there were other options. So what do you say to someone that later realizes they might have had a disappointing birth, but there's nothing they can do about it? Like, how does one heal from that?
Right. Well, a couple of things. One of them is we always say you did the best that you could possibly do, given what you knew at the time and given the people who were around you, et cetera. So it's never shaming. It's never, you know, you did the best you could. We all did the best we can. But oftentimes we go back and do the birth over again, and we stop at the point where she has some kind of an emotional response. So I have her lie down on a table, or if she was sitting up, I have her sit up and I'll say, what's happening now? And she talks in the present tense. And now I'm feeling like I need to push. And I'm saying, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And then she says, but they told me not to push just yet. And so we stop at that particular moment and we talk about her response, what people said to her, what she might have liked people to say to her. And sometimes we actually do it over again in a way that feels really comfortable with her. So I say to her, Ellen, now you can push. Of course you can push. You know your body better than anybody else does. Also, sometimes we have the mother, if she has a young little baby, bring her baby in. And we have her say all of the things that she didn't have an opportunity to say to that baby when the baby was born because the baby was whisked away. There are so many different things that we can do with women, but probably the first and most important thing is to listen to them, to truly listen to what they have to say. And if she says that she felt as if her birth was a decent birth the last time, I say, hold on to that.
Well, that's what I did. I said, is there any way that you can keep that as your memory? Because that's what you had until this. So hold on to what felt okay.
Yeah, hold on
all right.
to that.
Okay.
And build upon it. Yeah, build upon it. Yeah. So you're better off than many of the women who come here knowing right off that everything really was yucky, really yucky. So yeah, hold on to that. Feel good about it, you know? So yeah.
No, that's great. And if you have stories that you want to share, I think people love hearing that. So yeah, jump in.
One of my favorite stories about traumatic birth is a woman whose name is Eileen. And she had been seeing a psychiatrist and she had been on heavy doses of antipsychosis medication since her babies were born. She'd had three C-sections. And her psychiatrist had gone back in childhood to her relationship with her mother and to all kinds of family origin kinds of things. And she came to me and she had her fourth baby vaginally after three cesareans. And she said, I stopped taking my medication cold turkey. I haven't gone back to see the psychiatrist. It didn't have anything to do with, you know, my relationship with my mother or my grandmother or this, that, or that. It had to do with my woman play. place, my woman's space, and I needed to have the experience of giving birth to a baby. However, there are also women who aren't going to have any more babies. They are traumatized by what's happened to them, and they're not going to have any more babies. And so we do things with them as well that help them to close the book on depression in a way that feels healing to them. And again, part of it is just, Deborah, by listening to them and having them tell their story over and over and over again, and holding them and rocking them and inserting whenever possible things that they can think about the fact that they did their best, and they did that perhaps even to protect their baby. If they thought at any point in time that their baby was in danger, and so they made a decision based on the fact that they thought their babies were not okay, you can't fault them for that, and they can't fault themselves for that. So we just love them, love them, love them. I want to tell you that I'm not a therapist. I don't claim to be a therapist. And by the same token, I've had so many people who have come to me who have said, 2 hours with you has been worth it. And I'm not saying this to kind of pat myself on the back. Please don't misunderstand. 2 hours with you, and I feel different, and I feel better than I felt with 2 years of therapy. And I think part of it is that because I'm not a therapist, I can say things to them, and I can do things with them that a therapist really can't do. For example, I can hold them on my lap and I can rock them. I can just hold them. Nowadays, it's not appropriate to, you know, touch or hold. I can hold these women and I can rock them as if they were the baby and just go, shh, you're okay, sweetheart. You are okay. You made the best decisions that you can. And so I can do things like that. I can also say swear words. I can say that really sucked. That really sucked. And you deserve to feel fucking angry. I mean, I can do things with these. You may have to take that out.
No, it's but good.
I can do things with these women, not to mention the fact that because I was so traumatized by my first birth and a little less so with my second, but traumatized with both of them, that I think they understand that there's nothing they can't say to me. Everything is wide open. They can tell me how much they hated this and they hated that person, and they feel betrayed and they feel angry and they wanted to scream and yell. So I think that there's something to be said for having peers when I do workshops on healing after a traumatic birth. The fact that there are women in the room who have all had traumatic births. I did one, I know I'm kind of going now stream
of consciousness. Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
I have had one workshop where the women were all talking about they're horrible cesareans. And then one woman say, well, I actually didn't have a cesarean, but my baby died. And then everybody in the room sort of couldn't speak because they thought that, oh my goodness, well, at least my baby's alive. And then they didn't feel like for a period of time that they even had the space to be able to talk about how traumatized they were, because in comparison. So we do all kinds of things about not comparing upset, not comparing grief, and making sure that everybody understands that your pain is your pain. Another thing that we do at the workshop is we make a list of all of the things that people have said to us that don't make us feel any better than we did, and in fact make us feel worse. And so one person said, you know, my mother said, for God's sakes, get over it. And somebody else says, as I said before, you know, well, at least you can have children. My cousin can't have any kids. And we make a list of all of the things, and we make a pact not to say any of those things because they've heard them. They don't need to hear them again, even if there's a touch of truth to them. What they need to hear is, I understand that you are in pain as a result of what happened to you. And this is absolutely valid. And thank goodness you are one of the conscious women. Because how many women end up with C-sections and icky births and say, oh, well, you know, big deal. It doesn't matter how your baby's born. And it does matter. At least to some people, it does.
I think, yeah, I was actually going to ask about that question of how do you react when someone says, you know, get over, at least your baby's alive and well, because while there's truth to that, which is of course what every mother wants, it doesn't take away the pain of feeling shamed or unheard or unseen or belittled. So, and the fact that you're giving the women space just to explore, sometimes I think it's so uncomfortable for family or support to see someone they love in pain that they try to push it away. Be like, you know, just focus on the baby. Thank God we that. And then the women feel belittled that they can't express. So I think you're absolutely right that if they don't have the opportunity to work with you or a therapist, but just have the chance to have someone hold the space for them to hear them say, I'm really angry. You know, why did they say that? Or why did this happen? And I think that's not always given.
Right. I absolutely agree with you. I ask them, what have your ears not heard? What words have you not heard that would help you to feel different or better? And sometimes they don't know right away. Mm-hmm. They don't really think there's even a possibility that they're going to feel better. But then all of a sudden they say, oh my goodness, I wish that my doctor would have said this or that. So we have them in many respects kind of craft their own healing, because I don't know exactly the words that that particular woman needs to hear, but perhaps at some point she will know. And then I ask her, not just your ears, what would your heart, what does your heart want someone to say to you? And then what does your vagina want you to say, somebody to say to you? And somebody says, I want somebody to say that my pelvis rocks, that I have this wonderful pelvis, because now I feel like I'm inadequate. And so we help them to craft their own. We do a lot of artwork if that appeals to them. We do some music if that appeals to them. We do all kinds. We take walks outside. The sky is the limit, because I'm not a therapist. I'm just a woman who had two traumatic births and then a wonderful home birth. But I had two traumatic births, and I found out what were the things that worked for me. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for everybody else. But through trial and error, I found out what works with many women. And then we find out what specifically would work with that particular woman. Sometimes she does this on her own. Sometimes we need to have her mom come in and talk with her. Sometimes her partner needs to come in. Sometimes she needs the baby to be with her. Sometimes she doesn't need the baby to be with her. But there are all kinds of really easy, inexpensive, wonderful things that can be done to help women to begin to feel stronger and more positive about themselves, and to feel as if the healing will take place. I know what I did with one woman. We had her put on this bathrobe and we tied it at the bottom, and we threw tons of stuffed animals inside the bathroom. So she was actually pregnant with about 15 different stuffed animals. And we made a slit in the bathrobe, and we had her, in a sense, birthing every one of those stuffed animals with another statement about how upset she was. So she would pull in put her hand into the slit in the bathrobe, and she would say, and I didn't like it when this happened, and she'd throw the stuffed animal, and then she'd say, and I didn't also like it 10 minutes later when they told me that I wasn't even 9 centimeters. And we do all kinds of strange and silly things that sometimes come to us in the moment and weren't planned. But this woman has always said to me, I think about my cesarean now, and I still feel sad, but I also think about being in your living room and throwing the stuffed animals all over the living room. And one of them landed on the top of the table. And she said, I don't know. She said, something just feels different. So,
well, she released a lot of the anger. And I love that these are great ways to start to rebuild self-esteem and empowerment, especially if someone's planning on having another baby, you know. Mm-hmm. And so are these some ideas about how to heal from that so that a woman can enter and prepare for another pregnancy? Or are there other tools that you might encourage? Because I remember my own second birth. My first, I wouldn't put it traumatic, but it was long. So I guess, and there was parts of it that felt traumatic. I felt supported and heard the whole time, but my body was trashed after. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to my midwife that my biggest fear of my second birth was repeating the healing I physically had to do, which was hard, especially if, you know, then I had two kids. And she just said, you know, like, so what happens if you have another long birth? So I kind of had to face that. So what other ways can someone prepare if they had a traumatic birth for another one or another birth?
We do a tremendous amount of preparation. My appointments with women are at least an hour to an hour and a half or 2 hours long. And we talk about nutrition. All of these things that I'm going to be mentioning play some role in helping the woman to feel more powerful, to feel as if she's doing something to change what's going to happen, or to kind of create a different path for her. And also they just make a difference in terms of her physical body. So we talk a lot about nutrition, about eating good food and healthy food and eating enough food so that she is going to feel physically better and stronger, and she's going to grow a really healthy uterus and a healthy umbilical cord and a healthy placenta, etc. We talk a lot about positioning this. Many of the times, the reason the woman had traumatic, very long labors or traumatic births has to do with the position of the baby in the uterus. Not only head down, but we want the baby obviously tucked with a face facing the spine. She's not allowed to cross her legs during the pregnancy. Most women don't know this. She's not allowed to, when I say she's not allowed, I'm not like, I don't have a whip over her. We encourage her not to cross her legs, not to lean back, because anytime you lean back, the pelvis tilts. She doesn't sit Taylor style, so that, we're doing things that we can do. She goes to spinning babies, perhaps. She does not sit on a birth ball, by the way. She does things to help line up the baby ahead of time so that she's going to have a shorter labor, because many long labors have to do with head position of the baby. She exercises this time, or she does different exercises than she did last time. We do relaxation exercises. I send my mothers, I used to teach hypnobirthing and Blissborn, and I send them to hypnobirthing classes, but not taught at the hospital. We talk about the fact that I need for you to find somebody who's independent, because to my way of thinking, many hospital classes, they just don't do the trick. They just don't do what I think needs to be done to unteach women fear and to help them to get ready to have a natural childbirth. And so there, go ahead.
I'm confused about why not sitting on a birth ball.
Oh, because first of all, bouncing up and down is not necessarily something that we do. And when you sit on a birth ball, you're in a semi-squat perhaps. And when you squat, you open up the pelvic diameter a little bit, which sounds good. But if the baby is in the wrong head position and you open up the pelvic diameter, the baby's going to start to come down in the wrong position. So I don't have my mother squat at all.
Well, what if it's higher? What if you're not, your hips aren't even in line with your knees, that your hips are slightly higher and your feet and your legs are parallel?
I have to tell you, I am not a birth ball fan, except in labor, leaning over the birth ball. That's one of the things. But I've been doing my own I've been a midwife for 22 years, but I've been doing birth work for many decades. And I'm not a fan of a lot of the quote unquote paraphernalia that we use. I know that years ago when I was a doula, the women would come to the hospitals with suitcases and birth balls and, you know, all kinds of things. And what I have come to in my own experience is that although there are certain things that can be useful once in a while, like a birth stool or whatever, women have been having babies since the beginning of time at home naturally, and they don't have a lot of this paraphernalia. And that as long as they are free to move around, they can put their foot up on a chair if they want to, or on a stool. We don't need a lot of that. But again, the birth ball has not been a friend of my clients for a very long time. And so I just don't have it as part of their, yeah.
Okay. I think we're going to agree to disagree on that one.
Okay. That's fine. That's good. Yeah. We just do our own research.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So.
Well, these are great ways for someone to really think about if they had a traumatic birth, approaching another one. And I know you and I are going to talk at another time about even changing the whole team of who you invite in. That will be another whole topic. So what can birth workers do to help right after a traumatic birth?
Before we do that, let me just tell you that I hope that I help the women to learn how to ask questions and to truly advocate for themselves, because I have a list of questions and I say, have you asked your care provider this question? Have you asked them? And most of the time they haven't, because they have 10-minute appointments. So they need to ask their care provider, if I go to 42 weeks in 2 days, how will you respond to that? If my water releases and I haven't gone into labor, what will happen? Last November, for the fifth time, I had somebody ring my doorbell in the middle of the night, somebody I had never met before, and she ended up having her baby in my living room. And last October, I had two women ring my doorbell, one of whom I had never met before, and she had her baby in my bathtub. And these were women who I think would have had traumatic births had they stayed where they were, because in all three situations, their water had released, and their obstetricians or their medical midwives had wanted them to come into the hospital to get induced. And we all know that if you get induced, your chances for having a cesarean is greatly increased. But to get back to your question, Deb, care providers or people around the woman, again, listen, listen, listen without judgment. Ask questions so that you get her talking about this, so that she gets some of this when she's ready out of her body, because all of this is circulating time and time again. And so when you say, tell me what happened, tell me what was the most upsetting part of that, tell me what you would have liked to have happened instead, tell me how you're feeling, whatever it is, we ask tons of questions so that they know that they have the opportunity to talk about this. And I have some women who come to me I don't charge them for this, 3 or 4 times, and say the same things over and over again until all of a sudden the story changes just a little bit, because they've told that part of the story and they've been heard, and perhaps they don't need to tell that part of the story anymore. It's resting, or it's starting to heal. And then something else comes up. They remember something else. So I think listening is the most, without judgment, is the most important thing that we can do for anybody who's hurting. Feeding them well, because sometimes they're not taking really good care of themselves. So in any way that we can assist them, by doing a laundry or doing an errand or taking a walk with them, or easing their life in some way so that they have the opportunity to get a little bit more rest. It's very difficult if they're so overtired and they've had major surgery, or they've had. So there are so many things that we can do to help them and to assist them and to support them in a way that gives them the time and the space to begin to feel whatever feelings they need to feel.
This is such great information. I know that it will continue to feed other women that have had this experience, because as we know, the numbers are huge of women that experience traumatic birth. I remember I wrote an article maybe 2-3 years ago, and it was a little staggering that women report having more postpartum stress and traumatic experience after birth than those that experienced 9/11. It was like, you would think like that is huge, but there was actually even more women that would say their birth was traumatic. I mean, these numbers were huge. And I looked up some quotes that women were saying, like their births were barbaric and traumatic. I mean, we don't want to enter motherhood this way. So I'm glad that you're offering information for women to process it, as well as process it and prepare should they have another. Because I can imagine if we don't release it after the first, it will get probably even worse after a second, or if they even have a second, they might feel so traumatized.
I do have women who weren't planning to have any more children because they were so traumatized by the first. We had one woman who had what we called a vaginal cesarean. She had 60 stitches in her vagina. And so she had, I've done some, I guess you'd call them slightly unorthodox things, but they've worked most of the time. I asked one of my clients who was having her second baby whether or not this particular woman who had had a traumatized birth could come to the birth, and she said, fine, bring her. And she saw what birth could be, and she went home and got pregnant. She had a home birth. So, yeah, so. And also, I have had women who, despite all of our best efforts and intentions, have ended up with repeat cesareans. And that's very, very disappointing and sad for me as well, because we do our very best. The one thing I can say to you is that without exception, every one of them has said, although they're extremely disappointed, they don't feel that they will necessarily have the kind of healing and postpartum that they had the first time, because they had tons of support. Nobody kind of pulled the rug out from underneath them. Nobody forced them into having a cesarean before they were really ready. They had people who were loving and caring around them. And for whatever reason, unbeknownst to us, they just couldn't get this baby coming vaginally. The decision was made to do a C-section, but they don't feel the trauma and the betrayal and the sadness. They feel like they gave it their all. They did whatever they possibly could. And you can't ask any more of them. So
absolutely. Do you have any last minute tip or advice for those listening?
Yeah, stay at home and have your baby at home with a really good, experienced, loving, caring midwife. And don't accept the kind of prenatal care that people accept as normal prenatal care in this culture as being adequate. It is not adequate prenatal care.
All right. Well, there it is. Straightforward. Yeah. Well, I wanted to thank you so much for your time and your wisdom. I think a lot of people are going to take this and really chew on it and get some great information out of it.
But Deborah, the thanks is truly all mine. I feel like I'm going to start to cry, so bear with me. Without people like you on the planet who are reaching out to people I will never meet, nothing's going to change. And so bless you for doing what you do on this planet. If one woman hears what we have to say and it makes a difference, then this will have been well worth our time together.
Absolutely. Oh, gosh. Now I got the chills and a little teary. Well, thank you so much. Enjoy your afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you. You as well.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.